Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. And in the studio with us, we have David Rice, executive director and playwright of First Folio Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Out in Oak Brook?
Oak Brook, indeed. Yes,
or is
sir.
It Oak Brook Terrace?
Oak Brook. Oak okay. Brook proper.
And Christian Gray. Thanks for joining us, Christian.
Thanks for having me.
And you are the Edgar Allan Poe character in a really, really interesting production. I actually went and saw it, The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, A Love Story. And there's so many things I want to talk about with this. We'll get into the play in a minute, but I love the venue. I was very curious about the venue. So talk about the Peabody Estate.
We are at a truly unique venue. We're located in a middle of a forest preserve inside an historic mansion, and it's called the Maze Lake Peabody Estate Forest Preserve and the Peabody Mansion. It's a 1920s Tudor-style mansion built for a coal baron, and he only lived there for 2 years, or actually a little less than that, and he died. His family ended up selling the property to the Franciscans, who operated this as a retreat center and monastery for over 60 years. They began selling the property off in the 70s and 80s, and in the early 90s, the Forest Preserve District of DuPage County bought the last 80 acres or so, including the mansion. And they turned the mansion eventually into an art center. And that's where my late wife Allison and I came on. Allison C. Vesley, yep. And she came up with the idea, and we started doing outdoor Shakespeare on a custom-built stage there in 1997. And then when the mansion was renovated enough, we moved indoors to the former sanctuary there in a 130-seat indoor theater. And so we still do the outdoor Shakespeare, and we do 3 indoor shows a year in the former sanctuary. And it's a really cool place.
I took some notes. It's just a great setting for an Edgar Allan Poe thing, piece, you know, especially during Halloween and stuff.
Yep. I mean, yep.
You walk in, and we were talking before we went on the air here, you walk into the library, there's a fireplace, like a study,
mm-hmm.
and you split the group up. It was a full house the night I went, and
yeah.
you kind of split people up into 2 groups, and people just go off in this mansion. There's a point, a couple times of total darkness. It's really, really one of the more interesting venues I've seen theater in.
When my wife and I conceived of this show back in 2006, we wanted to write something that used that mansion, that used that location. And the reason the audience splits into 2 was born out of simple practicality. Some of the rooms upstairs in particular that we take people to for different scenes will only hold 45 or 46 people. So we knew that in order to maximize the audience size, we had to start them together in the library with about 90 people and then split them into 2 groups. So everybody sees the same 4 scenes in the middle, but they see them in a different order. That the show was written specifically to be a non-linear story, so it doesn't matter whether you're in the blue group or the yellow group. You see the same scenes, but you see them in different order,
yeah,
and
you're
they
right.
all come back together at the very end.
And I was wondering where is everybody else? I kept wondering that.
Yeah. That is another fun part about the mansion is there's so many passages and staircases and things that that the 2 audience halves don't see each other until the very end again.
And you have little signs. I mean, like I remember a small space sign. If people are uptight about
yes.
small spaces, they can drop out of the group and stuff.
One room is quite tight and very dark, and so we do have a warning. And about every other performance, there'll be somebody who will take a look inside and just say, no, I'm going to sit out here.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's okay.
Now, Mr. Peabody dropped dead out on the property. I read he was in a fox hunt or something.
Yeah.
Heart attack. So
yeah.
Is this place haunted?
Boy, you'll get a lot of different answers to that one. What do you think, Christian? Let me get Christian Gray, our Edgar Allan Poe, to this.
Yeah, right.
You've worked over probably 20 shows or so at the First Folio.
At least, and I would say that you know there are so many people who have had different experiences. Some people who say that they can really feel ghosts, and they're like, oh yeah, there are a lot here. Wow, this is really haunted. Or and some people was like, nah, it's just creepy. I can tell you that our first experience when I first went out to First Folio for Midsummer And we had to go in that basement. This was before the mansion was officially opened for a tornado warning. And I think we were down there for an hour, maybe two, while we were down there. But I remember myself and some of the fellow actors decided to try to go explore the basement. And it was definitely a creepy experience. I was going through and I was like, this would be a great place to do a horror movie. Wow. it was really lovely. They've taken out some walls and it's a little clearer now. But at that time, it was very catacomb-esque. Trying to explore what was down there in the dark. And this is without cell phones or anything else. So I forget what we were using. I think somebody had a pocket flashlight or something. So that made it even creepier.
It has been used in movie sets or TV sets.
Yes, the mansion has appeared in a couple of independent films. And there is at least one, if not two episodes of the TV show Empire that have used it as a private, I think it's a private boys' school or a private school for wealthy kids.
In terms of direction and acting, like I said, I'm no Hedy Weiss or Richard Christensen, but it was interesting. What's it like for spacing and direction? And even when you took your bows at the end, like, you know, it was just to work in such a tight space and also have such intimacy with the audience and stuff. Talk about what that's like as an actor. It's just, you know, it's very unusual to me.
If you've worked in some of the smaller spaces, including the old space at Writers Theater, basically I liken it to film acting on stage. And so everything is very minimal, and yet you're going to have to project your voice. You're going to have to enunciate because you don't have any microphones to pick up what you're saying, and the audience is right there. Doing this show is really a unique experience for the actor. I've always likened it to being in your own personal Peter Greenaway film, where you're just going from room to room, from montage to montage. And the way I've always approached this, and when I first approached, first got the opportunity to do this role with Michael Goldberg directing, my immediate after the first rehearsal and kind of walking through where I was supposed to go, I had seen it a couple of times beforehand, but I had never experienced that same at least visuals. And everything else that goes along with being an actor, until that first walkthrough. And I thought to myself, this is what Poe was experiencing during that ambulatory experience that he had right before his death, walking through the streets of Baltimore. Uh-huh. Right before he died. And I said, this is how I'm going to approach this. And it's worked ever since. But going through it as an actor, and it's really fun when you bring in new cast members, because I remember, you know, watching them going through the same thing that I went through, trying to figure out this entire montage with Poe. They're kind of wide-eyed and going, how is this going to work? How are we going to get these audience members to get together at the same time? And what are we doing in this scene? And because it's unlike anything that they've ever experienced before, and it was unlike anything I had ever experienced before. And I've done a number of avant-garde type plays, but nothing like this. And it truly is a unique experience, both for the performers and for the actors. I mean, for the audience. It's a neat experience every night as well, because we will get different groups of audiences, some who are very rowdy and really, really laugh and enjoy themselves, and others who take this very seriously and who will be very quiet and attentive and listening. And so it just brings a different feel to it. I will say also one added bonus, if you ever get to experience the show during a storm, it is quite impressive. We had one of those for one of the previews this time around, and the lightning just seemed to come through. Yeah, right at the perfect timing.
That'd be great. I'm kind of a shy guy. I'm not outgoing, but I felt akin with my neighbors and stuff. And I told the woman sitting next to me, I caught the cough. You know, the cough you had out there. I caught my cold. And is there anybody else that does theater in like a 90-year-old mansion?
I am not aware of any other theater in the United States that performs inside a venue quite like this.
Yeah.
So, as I say, I when I use the word unique, I'm a former English teacher. I don't use that word lightly. It truly is one of a kind. I don't know of any other theaters located in this kind of an environment.
Before we go too far down the road, it's at 1717 31st Street.
Uh-huh.
Give me the performance times and when people can see it up through November 4th.
We run through November 4th. We've got performances Wednesdays through Sundays, 8 shows a week. There's some matinees and some evenings both. And the theater's located at the Mays Lake Peabody Estate on 31st Street, just west of Route 83 in Oak Brook. If you know where the Oak Brook Mall is, the theater is exactly 1 mile south of the mall.
23rd. Yeah, see, you caught that. You caught that too from the blood in the 23rd season, right?
Yeah, this is our 23rd season of producing theater out there. We don't do Poe every year, but this is the 6th time that we've done it since we created it back in 2006.
Okay, we're going to take a break, but before we go to a break, I want you to just talk a little bit synopsis of the show. It's a love story. Talk about all the different venues and the places it starts and yeah.
Yeah, the concept of the story is that the audience is experiencing Mr. Poe's life at the end of his life, that we're in 1847. It's close to his death, and his wife has passed a few years before, and in essence, Poe is reliving some of his experiences with his wife at the same time that he's living through some of the stories that he created, such as The Telltale Heart and The Pit and the Pendulum and Ligeia and some of the great poems like The Raven and Annabel Lee and The Bells. So the audience, it's not participatory in the sense that the audience doesn't have to do anything, but it is experiential in that the audience is in the moment and right there with the actors in these very intimate spaces.
Yeah.
And it combines elements of Poe's life in his tragic love story with his wife and cousin, Virginia, and who died of what they called consumption in those days, what we call tuberculosis, and all of the other horrors that happened in his life and how this brings together psychologically his need to create these incredibly macabre stories.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about Mr. Poe. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Open then I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, neither stopped nor stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady perched above my chamber door. Perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. Perched and sat and nothing more. Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more.
Ooh, boy. Christian Grey, the way Edgar Allan Poe there. The Raven?
The Raven.
Raven. That's great. Wow. Took me back to that house. So talk about your history with Poe. I mean, are you a Poe fan?
I am a huge Poe fan. Growing up in the South, it's one of those writers that you encounter. And
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And my mother was an editor, and she was a writer herself, not creative but expository. And you know, she introduced us to a lot of different authors. And my brothers are the big horror fans. Ironically, I am not. I loved Poe, I read a lot of his stories and became fascinated with his life. So I knew a bit of, you know, his upbringing and everything else. One of the neat things that I found with him, and at least in terms of similarities, was he was very misunderstood as a kid growing up. And you know, he had had many travel experiences, et cetera, but he never really felt like he had a family. I did have a family. I definitely had a strong family. But that was something that growing up for me, being physically disabled initially, I always felt like an outsider. And so
I didn't know that.
I was born with clubbed feet.
Okay.
And I had numerous surgeries. I did end up playing scholastic football and basketball. And that's another story in and of itself. But I knew what it meant to be an outsider, and particularly in the South. When you're unathletic, you're kind of on the lower tier of everything as growing up. And so Poe was always on the outside. And he was always beholden to John Allen, his stepfather, who eventually disowned him after his stepmother, surrogate mother, died of tuberculosis. So I felt a great affinity and connection with him because I knew exactly what that felt like. And so when I got the opportunity to play this role, I jumped at it. It was kind of a dream come true. I remember seeing the initial productions of it, and I loved it. So when Allison and David finally said, "Okay, you're old enough, you can do it now," I thought this was going to be a dream role, and indeed it has turned out to be that. And so just getting into his psychology, his pain, everything else about his writings, and you can read almost line by line all of that anguish that's in all of his stories and especially his poems. And I thought that was going to be the biggest challenge for me, was really diving into that and bringing that out and making the audience understand exactly where he's coming from when he's writing these pieces.
It's interesting. You're deep into it. As an actor, are there pieces of this that you would apply into other roles, or is it a complete separate thing when you get into a different role?
No, it's a completely separate thing. I mean, you know, I guess there's certain groundwork, emotional work, character, psychological work that you may do, but each character that you play is completely different, and each one brings a different challenge. And this one is, it's a huge challenge. It's straight through. It's certainly a challenge in stamina, but the stamina is not just physical. It's emotional. It's psychological, and it's a huge challenge in focus because the person playing Poe has to be there 1,000% because there's no escaping the audience anywhere. They're right on top of you.
Yeah.
Is Halloween one of your favorite times of year?
It is indeed. You know, I don't dress up in costumes. I get paid.
I hate to come to your house.
I have many friends who go absolutely, you know, bananas, and they create beautiful costumes.
I'm always amazed at how many actors absolutely love Halloween, and people are always amazed that it's no big deal for me. And I say, yeah, I've been paid my whole life to get into costume, and I think I'll just do this. Yeah, I'll answer the door. Yeah,
I'll answer the door. I'll enjoy what other people are doing because also
so you don't know when it comes to your house. You don't start reciting the Raven.
No. Well, plus, and also dressing up in costumes. I mean, we get to work with some of the best costume designers in the world. I mean, what are we going to do to put out on costume?
Yeah, right,
I mean,
yeah.
we know better. Yeah. So, I love Halloween. But yeah, in terms of participating, I will go, which I rarely do in throughout my life as an actor, is I usually go as myself.
Yeah. I got some questions here, but I'm kind of shooting from the hip. Is there a moment? I'm so fascinated with the venue and the house, and you're so close to everybody, and some of it's in the dark, but where you've really startled someone? Audience responses and stuff?
You can hear it.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I can sense it. In some of those venues, particularly like the library,
yeah.
I can feel the audience, and sometimes I can hear reactions or what have you. But usually, one, I'm into my role. Two, I just can't see them because the light is shining directly in my eyes. So it's just a big blur. The only time that I really get a chance to see people's eyes is right before Telltale Heart. And that's the room where I can really connect with the group. But beyond that, and even in Lygia, because we're not really doing the same things as we get to do in Telltale Heart, I don't get a chance to see them. It's only in that moment.
And before we go any further, talking about the experiential nature and what the audience is going through, I want to make sure we mention the incredible team that put this whole show together, starting with our director, Skylar Schrempp, who came in and took a show that had been done before and reimagined it in so many clever ways and brought a freshness to it. And she's just a marvelous person. But also our designers, Christopher Kriz's sound design is an extra character in the show, especially in scenes like The Telltale Heart and The Pit and the Pendulum. Michael McNamara's superb lighting and Rachel Lambert's marvelous costumes to pull us into that that early 19th century era. And that's where we get that whole experiential nature is from that incredible director and that series of designers.
Yeah, Skylar did a really good job of reimagining particularly one scene and certainly the transitions and in part reshaping a lot of the scenes. And I think she had a really astute eye as to what was going on in terms of what had happened, what had worked, and what she wanted to do differently. So, yeah, hats off. And our designers are fabulous. They're always terrific.
Again, it's Maze Lake Hall, Maze Lake Peabody Estate, 1717 31st Street, Oakbrook.
Correct, Oakbrook.
And give me the website again.
www.firstfolio.org.
Okay, we're going to take one more break, and then I want to come back and talk just a little bit about the theater in the western suburbs and your journey through that. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN, and we're talking with David Rice, executive director and playwright of the First Folio Theater, and in the studio also is Christian Grey, actor who portrays Edgar Allan Poe.
Hello, how are you?
It must have been powerful because I'm looking at you and I'm still thinking of all the Poe stuff. You were great.
Well, thank you.
So powerful.
Thank you.
David, talk about the journey of the theater group of First Folio and what it was like, you know, when you started and how you've cultivated your audience.
Yeah, it was interesting starting a professional equity theater out in the suburbs rather than in the city where most people expect the professional theater to be. Out in the suburbs up to that point, there really was no professional theater aside from the big houses that were doing musicals. Drury Lane, Oak Brook, of course, and in those days, the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse was out in the suburbs and still running, and of course Marriott, but that was pretty much it. So it was interesting to try and forge a new identity out there, especially being outdoors to begin with. That helped us. It gave people that sense that there was something special out there to do the Shakespeare Under the Stars, and that gave us a big boost.
Demographically, where's your audience from? How much of it's from the area? Do people come out from the city? It's really not that far from the city.
No, we have I would say 60 to 65% of our audience comes from within 10 miles. So primarily the western suburbs, but we have a large contingency that comes from the northern suburbs and the southern suburbs, and in from the city. I have customers who come over from Indiana and come down from Wisconsin to come and see the shows, especially shows like the Edgar Allan Poe show. We've done a series of shows based on the P.G. Woodhouse stories of Jeeves and Bertie Wooster. And Christian plays Bertie Wooster in those. And those are amongst our more popular. And people come from quite a large way away, quite a long way away for those.
Christian, what about the for both you guys, what about the acting pool? City people?
Mainly city people. We also record from the suburbs, and you know, we get a lot of transplants from different areas, whether it be Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, various programs out there as well. But most of them live in the city proper, and because of the nature of at least what we can afford to pay everybody, its proximity to the city, et cetera. David can speak more accurately to this, but most of we get from the city. But most of the actors in the city are usually either, you know, from areas all over the country.
Yeah, and I always like to stress that we are an equity theater company. We draw from the same pool as everybody else. We've got a half a dozen First Folio alums working on Broadway right now at this very minute. So,
as your audience I don't want to load up the question, but has it grown more sophisticated over the years? I mean, sometimes people would say there's a difference between suburban and urban theater and stuff. How would you describe your audience?
Boy, that's an interesting question. I haven't thought about it. I would say that the theater-going audience in general in the 23 years that we have been in business has grown more sophisticated. That I actually go back to 1981. My wife and I did our first professional show here in Chicago back then, and watching the whole change in the theater atmosphere, it has become extremely sophisticated much more intense, yeah.
What was your first show?
My first show here was at a it was called Pegasus Players, up in the Edgewater Presbyterian Church at that time, and it was a musical version of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Really?
Yes, and it was just as strange as that sounds. But it was great. That was my professional debut in Chicago.
And what was the genesis? How did you and Allison decide to start this first play?
Well, we had met doing some theater, and we got married, and we're doing it professionally. And then I went back to teaching full time. You know, acting income can be ups and downs and that sort of thing. We had a daughter, and she heard about the plan to turn the Mays Lake Peabody Estate into an art center, and we just lived a couple of miles away from there. And I give her full credit. She took the bull by the horns and did the legwork to meet up with the groups that were trying to do this and figure out what we had to do and incorporate and get a couple of lawyers involved. And because I was still teaching full time, I didn't have the time to do all of this. And the reason we started outdoors was twofold. First of all, that was the only space that was available. The mansion hadn't been renovated yet. But also because I was still teaching full time, working in the summer meant that I was free to actually to run the theater and produce and later on do some acting and writing, things of that nature. But it gave me a chance to keep my finger in the professional world.
It's just such a great idea. You're a four-time winner on Jeopardy.
Yes, I am.
I read that somewhere. I don't know where.
Yeah, one of my bios. Yeah, yeah. Back in 1990, I was on Jeopardy. I was on for 5 days. I won the first 4 days and lost the fifth. So I didn't get to go to the Tournament of Champions, but I had a great time.
That's great. So what do you guys got coming up? What's coming up for projects for both of you?
Well, First Folio's got some really fun shows coming up. This is the first show of the current season. And in the winter, we're doing a show by one of our resident playwrights, Joe Zettelmeyer, and it's called All Childish Things. It's a very funny and surprising heist play. A group of four friends, Star Wars nerds in their 20s, decide that they are going to hijack or steal a bunch of memorabilia from the Kenner warehouse. And of course, you know that things can't go right. So that's it's fun and it's funny and it's surprising and it's mysterious, and that's a great play.
This will be in the house.
That'll be inside our regular space inside the mansion in the former sanctuary. Yeah. So that's our next show.
And for me, I will be doing Arms of the Man with my other home company, Shaw Chicago. And speaking of Shaw Chicago, I would like to just mention that the theater community grieves for the passing of our artistic director, Bob Scoggin, who was a titan in the theater community. And he actually came out to First Folio the same year that I did. And he played Bottom in Midsummer Night's Dream, and I played Lysander.
Yep.
We will all miss Bob greatly. He was a huge Shaw and Shakespeare expert and a mentor and friend to almost the entire community.
Give us the information again one more time, how people can – tickets still available? I mean, I really can't recommend this. I mean, it's high enough. It's just a great way to see theater.
It's extremely popular. There may be a few tickets left for our closing week, and you can find that out by going to the website at firstfolio.org, and then they click on the show page for Poe, and then on there's a button that says check ticket availability, and that'll let them know what's still available.
And Christian, how can people keep up with you?
Shaw Chicago, we are at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, and you can basically go onto the shawchicago.org website to look at tickets for Arms and the Man.
Well, thank you so much for coming down here.
Oh, thank you for having us. We really appreciate this.